It's game week. The Tigers and the Cajuns getting ready. Will they have an opener similar to what we saw in week zero? Poor tackling and down to the wire finishes. Drew Brees looked pretty good to me. So did River Ridge in the Little League World Series. A bombshell in Indianapolis. And Rory, can you lend me a little dough today, Monday, August 26th, 2019?
Third and seven for Brees and company. Out of the gun. Brees pulls the trigger, looking for it all. End zone. It's hauled in. Touchdown. Terrific grab by Thomas. They put it over the head of Campbell, and the Saints strike first.
Gators rush forward to screen. Dallas goes up and makes a one-handed catch and now takes off. DJ Dallas busting into the clear and knocked out at the 4-15. An explosive play.
Late in the night, everybody at the table is all in. Tate. They're going to take their shot here. 5 seconds.
He can go. He can go. He can do this.
It's a head to lead.
With his 16th hit, adding to his record total, in with a double. 3-0 Louisiana. Off speed, race, and Ritz catches it. And Louisiana is your Little League World Series champion.
Pitch swung on and hit in the air to right center field and deep. It is high, it is far, it is gone. A Judgian blast. His third home run of the series. He is getting hot. Aaron Judge. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
Oh, what a weekend it was, and welcome. Monday edition, the Jordy Helperk Show. August 26th, the year 2019. CD. Back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 1037 The Game. It is great to be with you. Absolutely. What a weekend it was, and we'll talk all about it. We have sound coming from Ed Orgeron. It was his first weekly press luncheon. We'll hear from Billy Napier of the Raging Cajuns as well. Sean Payton and Drew Brees. Football is upon us. But as you heard during some of the opening montage, what a weekend it was. And we start with the little ones. River Ridge, Louisiana claimed its first Little League World Series championship Sunday. Here is the final out to win it all over Curacao. The dog pile ensued. Egan Prather threw a two-hit shutout. Marshall Loke hit a pair of doubles and drove in three runs. And Reese Roussels finished the tournament 17 of 23. That's about a 740 batting average. Set the mark for the most hits in Little League World Series history. The boys from my hometown, 8, Curacao. Zip. The golf season officially closed in Atlanta, Eastlake Country Club, with the Tour Championship, with the FedEx Cup title on the line. And down the stretch, Rory gets it done.
And Rory McIlroy is a two-time FedEx Cup champion at Eastlake.
Rory wins $15 million on the day. Xander Schauffele came in second. Not a bad 4 days. He won $5 million. Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, $3.5 million apiece. Paul Casey, $2.5 million. Adam Scott, $1.9 million. Tony Finau in seventh, came up with $1.3 million. Wow. What a game. What a season. Rory McIlroy gets it done. Gets it done. Now, while watching college football and switching between Florida and Miami and watching the Saints and the Jets, you saw at the bottom of the screen the crawl in red, breaking news, a shocking development came down in Indianapolis.
And I guess in a philosophical sense, I want to thank football for so many wonderful moments in my life and the pressure, circumstances, environment that pushed me to grow, learn, change in so many meaningful ways. It's the greatest team sport in the world.
Andrew Luck steps away from the game of football. Injury, September 2015, sprained shoulder. November 2015, lacerated kidney, partially torn abdominal muscle. January 2016, torn cartilage. November 2016, concussion. January 2017, shoulder surgery. November of 2017, placed on the IR, shut down for the season. In August of 2018, he finally returns to action, the comeback player of the year in the NFL, and now a calf strain leading to a high ankle sprain. They don't know exactly what in the Sam Hill is going on. I understand. This is the new world that we're in. The story breaks right during their preseason game, in which Andrew Luck is on the sideline. He's coming off the field. People are on their phones reading this breaking news, and they start booing Andrew Luck. You know who I blame for Andrew Luck's retirement? I don't blame Andrew Luck, and I don't fault him at all. Who are we to judge what's going on in the mind and the body of that human being? He can do whatever the Sam Hill he wants. You know who failed Andrew Luck? The Indianapolis Colts. Their GM, their head coach, they never protected him. They never got an offensive line in front of him. And he was hit more often than any other quarterback in his six seasons. It wasn't even close. I don't blame the guy for not wanting to get hurt and have to rehab and get hurt. And these people that are saying, I understand fans and the immediacy. I do. And they say, well, why didn't he make this decision earlier? We could have gone and gotten a quarterback. Hey, shut up. Shut up. He has the right to do what he wants. He has the wherewithal to do what he wants. He has the financial support to do what he wants. So he just got to be quiet. But the Indianapolis Colts failed Andrew Luck. And wouldn't it be ironic if he took a year or two off, Drew Brees retires, and the Saints get Andrew Luck as the successor to Drew Brees? I'm just saying, he's only 29 years old. Makes you absolutely marvel at what Drew Brees and Tom Brady have done and the longevity of their career. Absolutely phenomenal. Andrew Luck retires from the NFL. Maybe not as dramatic as Babe Ruth, but Aaron Judge promised a fan he'd hit a home run. And in the third inning, he did this.
Pitch swung on and hit in the air to right center field and deep. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A Judgian blast. His third home run of the series. He is getting hot. Aaron Judge. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
16th home run of the season. 99th of his Major League Baseball career. He called it. He got it. And college football is indeed back. Florida and Miami both looked like they didn't want to win. Offensive lines were bad. Felipe Franks, what was he doing at the end of the game with 4 minutes to go throwing a pass like that? My goodness. The Gators somehow prevailed. The band director was beaten up after the game as they were walking to the bus. But that's another story for another day. And then we had the wild, wild whack. Arizona and Hawaii ended the night with a bang. Hawaii led 45-38 with 10 seconds left. One last play for Arizona and their quarterback, Khalil Tate.
Late in the night, everybody at the table is all in.
Tate.
They're going to take their shot here.
5 seconds.
He can go. He can go. He can do this.
He's
going to have the lead.
Signs of Tennessee Titans in the Super Bowl. Khalil Tate just a yard short, and the heater is on for Kevin Sumlin. That's just some of the weekend in review. Let me tell you what we have today. We have Brooks Kubina coming up from The Advocate. We'll hear from Coach Orgeron. Always the most important thing before the first game is the depth chart. LSU released it. We'll go over it coming up in just a minute. We'll hear from Bob Rose. The Saints get a win. It doesn't matter that they beat the Jets. Just what did they do in that opening drive? How about Drew Brees to Michael Thomas to Alvin Kamara? Look like a Super Bowl contender to me. Nick Fontenot will recap the Raging Cajun presser today in hour number two. And each and every Monday, Ross Dellinger will join us. He was in Orlando, Florida versus Miami. Did you see on the interception the reaction from one Steve Spurrier up in the stands? It was absolutely priceless. All these stories and more. It's Monday. It's game week. We're rolling. The Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com. LSU. Up center stage. Next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
We're looking forward to putting this red offense on the field against a good Georgia Southern defense. I want to see our speed. We got a lot of speed. We'll give the receivers the ball in space, let them make plays. But we want to be 50-50 with the run game. We still want to be physical. We want to control the clock. Be interested to see how we do. I think we'll do very well.
One of the many clips from Ed Orgeron's press luncheon today, he said, we have the talent to be a spread offense. We can go five receivers at any time, four receivers. We're mainly going to be out of 11 personnel. That's one tight end, three receivers, one back. We've got a plan, and it all stems with our quarterback. I do believe we're going to be great because of our quarterback. Our quarterback can handle most situations. I think he's a game changer. LSU opens up 6:30 against Georgia Southern in Tiger Stadium. You can listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game. Brooks Kubina is always at every LSU football event, and he of The Advocate is kind enough to join us today. Brooks, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Jordy, doing well, man. Just got out of that press conference there, and you know, you mentioned you ran that clip of what Ed was talking about with his offense. Kind of main thing out of that, yeah, there was that personnel, one tight end, three receivers, a back.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest thing there is tempo. You said they wanted to be able to control the clock, and against this team they're going to play up here with Georgia Southern, that's going to be a big, big part of the football game.
That is a great point. The most important thing to me in the first press luncheon is the depth chart. So let's you and I go through it, and let's talk about it and see if there are any surprises to you. We'll start on the offensive side of the football, and we'll start on the offensive line. He's got Sadiq Charles as the left tackle, still to be determined at left guard. Adrian McGee, Chasen Hines, what do you read into that?
So I find it interesting that Chasen Hines is still in thought there because he didn't practice very much in the preseason at all. He still you know, has been recovering back from off-season knee surgery, and there was very few times that we saw him on the field in full pads practicing with the team. I don't know if that means Adrian McGee hasn't developed in the way that they want him to as a senior, but you know, maybe that means they have a lot of confidence in what Chasen can do. I think from the very beginning of the spring football, Ed was pretty high on Chasen and expected him to take over that starting role, and he played there a little bit last year, and I think they want to give him a shot at it. I would read more that this game upcoming is an opportunity to actually see whether Chasen has developed or not, whether Adrian can hold on to it. So there's still question there. And I think also part of this is, yeah, Chasen didn't show them a lot in preseason by putting the pads on, but they also don't know whether he's not good at left guarding and would lose that spot. So I think there's still a lot of questions, and keeping him there and giving him the opportunity to play gives them a better idea who should be starting there or not. I think that's mainly what's going into that decision there.
and certainly no slight to Georgia Southern, but you want to make sure you know who can and who can't by the time you have to go to Austin. We know that Lloyd Cushenberry is the center, but the backup is Charles Turner, the true freshman, 6'4", 266. So, Cushenberry, stay healthy, right? Yes.
Yes. I would also think Chasen Hines could go there at center. We've seen him take snaps, and if he's healthy, we've heard Ogeron talk about that as well, as someone who can go back there and play. Depending on how Charles Turner is and his weight and size, maybe he'll play second team, but I would expect that maybe they'd flip somebody else there if something were to happen to Lloyd.
We've got at right guard Damian Lewis. Austin Deculus is the right tackle. So there's your starting five on the offensive line. I was surprised at the tight end. Apparently Thaddeus Moss Brooks has taken control as of now as your starter. Is it because he can not only catch the ball, but he's a better blocker than Stephon Sullivan?
I think Ogeron's been pretty high on Thaddeus throughout the camp. He said that he's had a great camp. He likes his size and his physicality. He says he's caught the ball very well, and I think he's been impressed with his work ethic. He talked about in the spring, Moss was still coming back from his foot injury, and he stayed back on campus, and Ogeron found him in the weight room. He says, "What are you doing here?" He's like, "I want to be better. I want to be ready for the season." I think Ogeron is really impressed by things like that, and it seems like Moss has really taken this approach from the off season into now, and it looks like he's earned this position. The other thing that goes into it, I don't think he's completely earned the starting role because he did kind of use his name interchangeably with Stephon Sullivan I don't think they can ignore Stephon Sullivan's size at the position and the fact that he is a very good ball catcher and showed that last year as a wide receiver. He's just going to be able to do some things as a receiver that Moss is not. And, Stephon Sullivan wasn't around last week for a couple of practices, so maybe they still have to see some things from him to decide whether or not someone gets the edge. But just like on the defensive line, I sure will get there. But these guys, even if Moss is called the starter, they're going to be shifting him around because they have different capabilities. So just because Moss is thrown out there, I think obviously he's a better blocker, and that's something that Ed said today. Stephon is a difference maker. Obviously, he's not the big blocker like Thaddeus would be. Those are Ogeron's word today. So they have different skills, and I think that's why you see the position chart like it is.
Brooks Cabina, the advocate. No surprises as far as the three wideouts are concerned. Jamar Chase, Terrace Marshall Jr., Justin Jefferson. No surprise at quarterback. No surprise at running back with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But Coach O did say everybody's going to suit up and everybody's going to have a chance to play. And he's pretty darn high on Emery and Davis Price.
Yeah, he said today about John Emery that he is exactly what they thought they would recruit with him and more in John Emery. And if you we've talked about him on this radio show several times in the preseason. So signs of his speed on some videos that got onto Twitter and all that. But it seems like there's a lot of talk about what he can do. And we'll definitely see that against Georgia Southern.
All right, let's go to the defensive side. You asked for it, and we've got it. Let's start with the three down linemen. And again, some interchangeable parts for sure, but Glenn Logan is one. Tyler Shelvin is in the nose, and Rashard Lawrence is at the other defensive end. So no real big surprises there. Siaki Aika, Apu Aika is going to play as well. So interchangeable parts here and there.
Yes, and I think the main thing with this defensive line to remember is that they're going to a more aggressive style throughout the year, asking to attack more, to shoot more, to get into the backfield more often. And that requires a little more energy. So they're going to be giving guys rest, going to be using them interchangeably. And Tyler Shelvin and Apu Aika especially, because big guys with conditioning that they've been trying to get them down to what they are, that they're going to be rotating those guys, I would expect, more often. And Ogeron said today between Shelvin and Aika that both of them are starters in his mind. And he said the same thing about the defensive ends, because they're going to be rotating that much. And it'll be interesting to see how the line is used, because we've heard that they might use four down fronts and all sorts of things on the defense. So the depth chart for the defense is really kind of funny, because it's really never going to look as it does on the depth chart as it is right now.
Take it with a grain of salt, but they got Shelvin listed 6'3", 346, and Apu Aika 6'4", 350. 54. Nice size for some nose tackles.
Absolutely, and it was much higher whenever they were recruited and in their first season. So those weights still are fluctuating throughout the season, and we've heard them go up and down as often as they do. So they could even get into better shape as the season goes on.
Outside linebackers, no surprise. Ray Thornton backed up by Andre Anthony. Kalavon Chaisson backed up by Andre Anthony. Inside linebackers, you got Michael Divinity backed up by Damone Clark. And then you got another horse race that won't be determined till maybe game time. Jacob Phillips and Patrick Queen kind of neck and neck right now.
So this is the position that I was kind of surprised to see that there was a competition there at inside linebacker. Beside Michael Divinity, because Jacob Phillips played well last year and, you know, played in most every game and started in most every game and played very well. I don't think many people were expecting there to be a battle there, but, you know, Patrick Queen has come on well, and Ed Ogeron's really impressed with Damone Clark. So all three of those guys, I don't think it's anything that Jacob Phillips did or didn't do. I think they just got a lot of development out of those guys, and there's some push at that middle line back position. So out of all the others, there was more like questions, you know, who at left guard is going to show up, who at right tackle is going to show up, you know, at nose tackle, who's going to develop most. I think the inside linebackers, just you got a lot of guys who are really good, how are you going to get them on the field? And you mentioned outside linebackers, so Ray Thornton, I think what you'll see, we talked about how the depth chart can kind of look kind of funky because they're going to change a lot. I don't know how many times you're going to see both outside linebackers on the field at the same time.
Because That's right.
You're going, one of the things that they're going to use a lot is Jacoby Stevens is more of an outside linebacker, that quarter safety position. So they'll bring in Grant Delpit, and he'll be at a safety, and generally the nickel guy will be Kerry Vincent. He's not even listed as a starter on this on the defensive depth chart, but he's going to be on the field a lot. And that outside linebacker is going to be out. It's just mostly going to be Kalavon Chaisson rushing on the outside edge. So, you know, who knows how much Ray and those guys will be used. I think those guys you'll see mostly when they go to their green team package, which on third down and passing situations, they're bringing in their best rushers and putting them on the line and seeing who can get to the quarterback. So I think that's where you see those guys more often.
Manny Netherly entered the transfer portal. He saw a bunch of freshmen ahead of him. So you got Christian Fulton and Derek Stingley, starters at the corner. Grant Delpit, Jacoby Stevens at the safety. But as you mentioned, Todd Harris is going to play. Kerry Vincent Jr. is going to play. And they're really high on this Cordell Flott, I hear.
Yeah, that's what Ed said today. We asked him about the depth, and he said Cordell Flott could start if he needed to. And, you know, I asked him about that because if you look at the cornerback depth, and we talked about this going into camp, behind Derek Stingley and Christian Fulton, there isn't a guy on the cornerback depth chart that has played in a football game at LSU. It's from Jay Ward, Ray Darius Jones, Cordell Flott, all these true freshmen. And Derek Stingley himself hasn't technically played in a real game, although he's been there since December. He's pretty much a redshirt freshman at this point. But the depth isn't, as far as playing time goes, there's some questions there. But he was very confident in Flott and said that he could start if they wanted him to. And maybe that did have a lot to do with why Manny Netherly announced he was going to the portal today.
Brooks, thank you so much, man. Go watch practice a little bit, get hear from the players, and we always look forward to talking to you on Mondays, man. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, Jordy.
Take care, buddy. We'll take a quick time out here. Saints Report next.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
We were able to gather some momentum on the first drive, made a few plays. It was good to see. Played a lot of different guys in combinations tonight. But I think there are a handful of things that were encouraging. You know, we turned the ball up. We forced a turnover early in the game. I thought our first units played well. I thought the seconds played better this week. It's good to get the punt return for a touchdown. I'm sure when we put the tape on, there'll be some things we want to clean up, but I was overall pretty encouraged.
That was obviously Sean Payton, pleased at what he saw in the Meadowlands as the Saints win preseason game number 3. And as always, we bring in Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles to get his viewpoint on things. Bob, thanks for the time. Before we get to the Saints, what were your thoughts on the news of Andrew Luck? And welcome to the show again, by the way.
Thank you, as always, for having me, my friend. Always a pleasure and a privilege to join you. Oh, wow. I think, like most of the NFL world, I was pretty shocked at the Andrew Luck news. The timing more than anything else. First of all, let me say this. Far be it from me or really anybody that sits in seats like ours to judge any professional football player on what they do with their lives, especially if they're looking out for their own personal security and, more important, quality of life with their family. So I don't hold that against Andrew whatsoever, and we certainly wish him luck in everything he chooses to do from now on through the future. But the timing, the timing, I think, is very curious, to say the least. He handcuffed his franchise. If he had doubts whatsoever, you would think that those doubts would have been in his head and in his heart for more than just 2 weeks, like he claimed them to be. So you have to be honest with your organization, because, in my opinion, loyalty works both ways. And Indianapolis did show quite a bit of loyalty to Andrew by not moving on from him as his injuries were piling up, giving him a long and extensively sized contract. And even afterward, they didn't fight about dollars or anything like that. It's my understanding they reached a quick settlement with Andrew, and they're not attempting to recoup any of the money already collected. So that shows class in that Colts organization. Andrew really handcuffed his team. But he made the decision, apparently, in what he feels is best for him and his quality of life.
And I bring up Andrew Luck, Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, because it makes me marvel at what Tom Brady and Drew Brees are doing. Andrew Luck's 29 years old. Drew Brees is 40, going on 41. And I don't know about you, but dadgum, he looked good on that opening drive.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. He and the rest of that number one unit, by the way, they stepped onto that field and, they were humming like a well-tuned machine that's ready to go for week one. And we wouldn't expect anything less from a Sean Payton-led offense. We've seen it for, 13 years now. So we wouldn't expect anything less. But for them to come out on fire, like they did. And, the Jets, like you and I talked about last week, the Jets are going to bring an aggressive defensive unit to this NFL season. And they have some talent on that side of the ball. And Brees and company quickly neutralized them, played their game, went by their scripted plays. Coach saw enough from that number one unit, so he sat down most of the big guns right after that. And I couldn't agree with that decision anymore.
It was an 8-play, 72-yard drive. Brees was 4 of 6 for 68 yards. Capped things off with a 19-yard strike to Michael Thomas. I mean, it just looked unbelievable. And look, you can see it. The four completions, 2 to Thomas, 2 to Alvin Kamara. Brees leaves the game with a 144.4 passer rating at 40 years old. I marvel at this guy.
Yeah, you can't help but to, and he's taken such great care of his body and mind over the years. And we've all heard Drew say that last year was as much fun as he's ever had playing football. And I don't think that was a negative slap towards any other teams that he previously played on. It's more of a testimony to where Drew's heart is right now. And I mean, he has the competitive fire of a lion. Yeah. Luckily, and for a smaller guy, as far as NFL quarterbacks go, Drew's taken quite a bit of punishment over the years because he will hang in there and make a play. I would think, being in my 40s myself, I know when wrestling around with my kids at home, I feel it. So I can only imagine what he needs to do to get back onto the field and stay at such a high level. But I'm going on record as saying this. A lot of people seem to presume that this is Drew's last year. I don't think so either. I think he has got at least two more left in him, and he'll step away when he feels like he can no longer play at the level that he expects from himself. And he probably has a sit-down conversation with his family every offseason. One would think as he's advanced in years a little bit that those conversations get a little bit more lengthy. But obviously everybody is on the same page there. And, for those that assume that this is Breeze's last year, I keep on saying to them, hey, not so fast. He's got a good thing going here.
I got a crazy scenario for you. Drew Breeze plays 2 years, retires. Andrew Luck wants to come back and play. Andrew Luck is the Saints quarterback at 31. Bob, never say never.
No, absolutely not. And, I've had some conversations with some people on, my social media sites yesterday. And I actually painted a scenario similar to what you did, only Andrew Luck rejoining the New England Patriots with, when Tom Brady decides to hang him up. Let's face it, that is such a Patriot thing to do. But Andrew Luck, is Andrew Luck Drew Brees? Absolutely not even close, in my opinion. If you were to paint that scenario for me in 2 to 3 years when Drew steps away, and if Andrew Luck's mind, body, and heart are all right, I would definitely welcome him in the Saints uniform.
In a heartbeat. All right, Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. We talked offense. I thought the defense looked pretty darn good. The starters, in the first quarter at least, boy, they stymied the Jets. They look like they're ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really impressed with that whole number one starting unit, with the aggressiveness. The front seven absolutely dominated the line of scrimmage. And I don't think New York even got a first down until drive four into the game. And as impressive as that starting unit was, I'll even go a little bit further. Sean and the coaches left their number one defense on the field a little bit longer than the number one offense. But when those number twos on defense started to trickle in, they still held control of the line of scrimmage well into the third quarter, I thought. So it just showed us what we already felt all along is that the New Orleans defense is extremely deep and talented. I don't think the number two unit got quite as much pressure on the Jets' backfield as the number ones, but they held their own extremely well.
I agree with you. The biggest looming concern to me now are these mounting injuries.
Yeah.
Tight end Garrett Griffin, wide receiver Keith Kirkwood, Austin Carr, running back Dwayne Washington, linebacker Josh Martin all left the game at some point, headed to the locker room. You're always concerned about that, and Griffin's injury appears to be the most serious.
Yeah, it did, I kind of felt bad for the young man because he was making a bid for the number three tight end job, it's a pretty competitive spot to shoot for. We know Dan Arnold is in that mix. Mr. Mack, the rookie from Notre Dame, finally got onto the field. And A.J. Derby, I thought, has played extremely well in all three preseason games. Garrett Griffin to go down like that, I have to feel bad for the young man. But in a way, I would expect the Saints, if it's as serious as it looked, like you pointed out, wouldn't surprise me if the Saints just kind of stashed Griffin on injured reserve because the coaches do like what he can bring to the field. We saw him activated for the two playoff games last year. So the coaches have confidence in what he could give them and depth at the position. Not great athleticism, but he brings a kind of blocking and intermediate receiving ability that we know Sean likes at tight end.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Before the preseason began, Marcus Sherrills was going to be the guy that returns kicks. He doesn't dress again. He's the best ability is availability. He hasn't been available. And my boy, rookie wide receiver Deontay Harris does it again.
Yeah, he did. That guy has been so impressive. Nearly every single practice session, he has electrified Saints fans and onlookers in all three preseason games. Yeah, I know he had the touchdown return the other day, but he was close to breaking numerous kickoff and/or punt returns in the previous two games as well. And you know what? I was really happy to see him get on the field as a receiver and make a couple catches. He showed nice footwork on one sideline reception. And in my opinion, if he hadn't already had the job, age roster spot sewn up, he definitely did it with that performance Saturday night because he opened up my eyes a little bit as a potential backup wide receiver as well.
Good to see Emmanuel Butler finally take what he had been doing on the practice field. He didn't have much yardage after the catch, but he was targeted five times, caught the ball four times. Has he made this club?
You know what? I think he has because we know what he has done in practice sessions against the Saints secondary. Even the top unit, he's taken Marshawn Lattimore to task a couple of times, Eli Apple to task. And those are two of the better starting cornerbacks in the NFL. And you're right. I was a little bit worried about Butler's roster spot because of his inactivity. Again, he was inactive against the Vikings and really didn't see much of the field against the Chargers. But you're right. The yardage that he ended up with on Saturday evening, that won't jump off of the charts. But if you watch the game, Butler, uses his physicality extremely well, runs sharp routes and turns upfield quickly after he secures the catch, which tells me that he can and will make plays after he with the ball in his hand. Coach Payton and Coach Carmichael's, they love size and athleticism combination at wide receiver. So I think that Butler has probably, assuming that the Saints keep six wide receivers, and I'm coming around to that line of thinking because of what Deontay Harris has done. I do think that Butler has done a little bit more consistently, practice in and practice out, to beat out Lil Jordan Humphrey, Austin Carr, and a guy who I really love, who I wish I had a better shot with, Cyril Grayson. But I would take Butler on my roster slightly above any of those guys.
Cyril, former LSU track sensation. So three preseason games are in the book. They've got the finale Thursday against the Dolphins, but the big day is Saturday at 3 p.m. Central when teams have to make personnel moves. They got to cut down 37 players. They got to go from 90 to the initial 53-player roster for the regular season. It's not easy. It's the hardest part of the job. My goodness gracious, where is the most difficult decision going to be in your book to get to 53?
I think it's going to start at wide receiver because of the names that you and I just ran down. You have to, obviously, Michael Thomas is safe. I would presume Ted Ginn Jr. Has a spot sewn up. And I think Kirkwood as well, although him being injured most of the preseason concerns me a little bit. But the names that you and I just ran down a few minutes ago, that's a tough decision to make between those guys because, not all of them. Obviously, you might be able to stash maybe two of them on the practice squad, but they have to clear waivers first. So the question would be, and this goes for any position, the question would be, is another team going to snatch them up for their active roster before the Saints have a chance to stash a particular player on the practice squad? And that's always a roll of the dice you make, if you decide to move on from a younger talent. A few players on the defense. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Continue. Go ahead.
I was going to say a few players on the defensive side as well, and that's where the injuries are really starting to mount up. We don't know the status of a Craig Robertson or an Alex Anzalone. I'm missing a member of the secondary that got a little nicked up the other night, too. But we don't know the status of them how that's going to influence the decision-making in the linebacking core or the secondary where both spots have also been pretty competitive.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the wide receiver position, you nailed it. I think Kirkwood would have been a no-brainer, but he's been hurt so badly. So that's the tricky part. What do you do with him? I think Michael Thomas, I think Ginn, I think Traquan Smith, Austin Carr, Emmanuel Butler, Deontay Harris. But what do you do with Kirkwood? That's the interesting challenge that that Sean Payton's facing.
Yeah, it really is. And in my opinion, and just what we saw on the field, it looked like the coaches and Breeze himself felt far more comfortable with Kirkwood on the field than they did Tre'Quan Smith towards the end of last season. And, you know, Jordy, I got a hot take for you. I don't think Tre'Quan Smith is in danger of getting cut. But if they move any players via trade to pick up draft picks or maybe bolster another position on the roster, don't be surprised to see Tre'Quan Smith traded to a more receiver-needy team. I don't think that it'll happen, and I'm not quite brave enough to go completely out on that ledge with a prediction, but it also wouldn't surprise me if it did happen.
Very interesting stuff. We shall see. No player. Can't we just cut down to three preseason games and then everybody take a week off and then get ready for week one at the same time? Well, why do we have to play on a Thursday when teams have just played on a Saturday or a Sunday? Why do they do this? I mean, nobody's going to go to these games. Who cares?
Well, we know why they do it, and that is the almighty dollar sign up in the highest offices. But I think that if you and I polled every NFL player and every NFL coach, I think that they would be all in for cutting back to three preseason games and, you know, leaving like a 10-day stretch between that final preseason game. More of a 2 to 2.5 week stretch between that final preseason game and the regular season opener. It gives your players like a Robertson or an Anzalone in this case a little bit more time to get healthy. It's not unheard of for a player to win or perhaps lose a roster spot in the fourth preseason game, but those coaches have, in 90 to 95% of the decisions have already been made for the roster. You're more or less letting younger players audition for other teams, because you and I both know that after the flurry of cuts on August 31st, in the next 48 to 72 hours after that, we're going to see a flurry of signings and players that thought that they made a roster getting cut after the fact. So there's still going to be that flurry of moves because there isn't as much time between that final regular season game and the regular season opener. So, yeah, I'm all for cutting back to three.
Bob, thank you. We always look forward to talking to you on Mondays. Let's keep this thing going, and we'll see. We'll talk about the roster spot, the 53-man roster next week. And we'll move on, get ready for the opener on a Monday night with Houston. How about that?
I'm excited, definitely excited. I'm ready for these games to count. Always a pleasure and an honor to join you. And, yeah, I'm all down for a regular Monday afternoon quarterback.
We got it, brother. We got it. Thank you, Bob. Put it in ink. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helfrich Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, a very busy Monday. We had the LSU Ed Orgeron press luncheon today. Wednesday night at 8 p.m., we'll have the Ed Orgeron radio show, 8 o'clock, with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair. So we are your source for LSU sports, and of course Saturday, big pregame show and postgame show and all that kind of stuff. I can't wait to see one player in particular, and that's John Emery, the much heralded running back who was committed to Georgia. LSU plays Georgia in Tiger Stadium and just beats the ever-living tar out of the Bulldogs. I remember we were talking about it. Ed Orgeron on scene with John Emery after the game, talking. Emery decommits, comes to LSU. Coach O talked about number four, John Emery.
First of all, John Emery is everything and more that we thought about in recruiting. He and Ty were the two best backs in the country, in our opinion. They're different. He can make you miss. He has tremendous feet. He has tremendous vision. He needs to get a little bit stronger in the weight room, get more comfortable in the offense. There were a lot of times in practice where he broke outside, we didn't catch him. So he had some explosive runs, very explosive runs.
So he's not quite ready to go play at Austin, right? I mean, he's got to learn the offense a little bit more, do all those kind of things. But I think as the season evolves, John Emery is going to be a very, very big factor. So we've covered LSU. We've covered the Saints. The Raging Cajuns coming up next. Nick Fontenot will join us in hour number two. And my buddy Deli, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, will talk about all things college football. 1 hour down, one to go. The Jordy Helfrich Show on a rainy Monday. Rolls on. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Helfrich.
How you doing, Acadiana? Welcome. Hour number two on this Monday, the 26th day of August. It is game week. We're in that mode. Both Ed Orgeron and Billy Napier have had their luncheon press conferences. Now it's time to put game plans in and get ready for the opener. LSU at home, 6:30 p.m., Tiger Stadium against Georgia Southern. The Cajuns going down to New Orleans, 11 a.m. kickoff against the Mississippi State Bulldogs. We've got Nick Fontenot coming up from the Daily Advertiser to talk about the Raging Cajuns. Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated will join us in this hour as well. But as we do each and every day, what a busy, busy, fun, exciting weekend it was. Football is back. Little League World Series is over. And my boys from River Ridge get it done. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All righty, Mr. Domain, welcome, my friend. And football's back. I'm flipping through games. I'm watching Florida-Miami. I'm watching the Saints and the Jets. And then Andrew Luck gets in the middle of all of it. Crazy.
It's crazy, Jordy, but it's the perfect time to kind of get things going. Of course, it's a Monday right after actual football happened, so might as well just do a little Monday afternoon quarterback edition of Hot Topics and get things going. What's causing all this? And without that, it's what you just brought up. Andrew Luck retiring. Like, when you saw that, how surprised were you on a scale of 1 to 10?
I was a 10. I had no earthly clue. But hey, again, who am I to walk in Andrew Luck's shoes? If he wants to retire, let him retire. My goodness gracious. I understand the angst. I put it this way. What if Drew Brees all of a sudden came up and said, I'm retiring right now, and you got a season opener coming up? I could understand the shock of it. I think the people that booed Andrew Luck will either continue to feel that way or they'll say, you know what, this guy really did an awful lot. And as I said earlier, I don't blame Luck. I blame management. They certainly didn't do the proper work to keep that guy upright and healthy. He was hit more than any other quarterback in 6 years by far, and they just didn't protect him. They didn't do the right job. That GM and the coaching staff just didn't do a good enough job, and Andrew Luck suffered the consequences because of it.
And Pat McAfee actually put it best, talking about, you know, we're saying, you know, a lot of the onus needs to go on former GM Ryan Grigson as being the reason why they just Absolutely. Never could get things going. Because that offensive line, and even when they drafted offensive linemen, it was absolutely awful, Jordy. But my next question to you involving Andrew Luck is this. There's a lot of conspiracy theories going on about Andrew Luck's retirement. So I got to ask you, just for fun, are you believing some of the conspiracy theories that Andrew Luck is going to join the XFL?
Who that? No, he ain't going to play with in Dad's league. No way.
Well, who's to say he plays?
Who that? Who dat? Two more years. Who dat? Who dat? Drew Brees retires. Andrew Luck steps in. Boom, we don't miss a beat. I don't know. Hey, look, he's 29 years old. A lot can happen. You know, he gets away from the game. He gets healthy. Maybe the love of the game comes back to him, and maybe he wants to play yet again. I don't know. Maybe he never wants to play again. The guy graduated with an engineering degree from Stanford. It's not like he's some dummy. He, you know, and he's got a lot of money in the bank. I mean, he's still got the flip phone, so he doesn't randomly spend his money on crazy things. He still has a very inexpensive automobile, so he's not out there buying Machbas and Lamborghinis and stuff like that. So very conservative. He saved his money. God bless him. God, let him go pick up his children instead of being in a wheelchair or something. My gosh. Who are we to fault him for that? So I wish him health. I wish him happiness. And the Doug Gottliebs and the Dan Dockages of the world with their incredible, just ridiculous takes on this matter. It's all about how can I get more people listening to me? I'm going to say something outlandish. Gottlieb goes, it's the most millennial thing ever. And Dockage says, I got a 50-year-old uncle who worked in the mill for 45 years. And he can't. I mean, come on. Stop it. Just be quiet.
Doug Gottlieb, what are we doing? Giving him the time of day, Jordy. But, of course, well, you were talking about college football. You were watching the Florida-Miami game. You and a lot of other people were. It had a 4.1 overnight rating, Jordy. The Miami-Florida game broke all kinds of records. The highest-rated college football game on the Florida Network since 2016 and the best Saturday opening game on record. Jordy, my question to you is this. Do we see more of these marquee Week Zero games?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Just put Steve Spurrier in the stands and keep panning up to a shot of him after the quarterback throws an interception with 4 minutes to go. I don't know what Felipe Franks was thinking, but Florida can't win with that guy at quarterback and making those kind of plays. And Spurrier, knowing the cameras were on him, he was just priceless with that look of incredulosity, even if that's a word. He was incredulous, like, I can't believe what I just saw. But anyway, neither team wanted to win it. Somehow Florida stole victory out of the jaws of defeat. But, man, opening game, lots of mistakes. But absolutely, one game, marquee matchup, Week Zero, it's coming from now till Timbuktu.
I can't wait for it, honestly, because one of the big things I talked about Saturday on my show, Under the Dome, by the way, 10 a.m. to noon, was about the fact that this year, like, it felt like Week Zero was something you'd actually wind up watching, as opposed to something you just kind of would not have on, and you just generally go about your business on a Saturday. But we'll flip it over to the Little League World Series, and obviously the big thing, the Louisiana Little League out of River Ridge wins the world title. And it makes me throw this question to you, since you've been around the block for quite some time. Where does this rank amongst titles won by the state of Louisiana?
Wow, that's right. That's in the top, top 10 for sure. The Saints winning a Super Bowl, two LSU national championships, LSU baseball wins a whole bunch of them. It's in there. And look, I was emceeing the Mikey Awards at LSU last night. And so I see Paul Maneri, and I said to him, Paul, has Reese Russell, and they got about three kids on that team that are going to be college and maybe pro baseball players. I said, you need to go offer them a scholar. He goes, oh, we're looking into it. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. So, that was awesome. I mean, congrats. It's like, they lost the opener, then they just steamrolled through everybody. It wasn't even close. So congratulations to River Ridge. That Prather kid throws the two-hitter. And Reese Russell only goes 17 of 23 in the tournament. That, you do your math on that. You take 17 divided by 23. That's about a 740 batting average. 740. Couldn't get him out. Amazing.
It was absolutely amazing to see from top to bottom. It was just an entertaining matchup, to say the least. 8-0. Reese Russell, and you know what the coolest thing about it all, Jordy, was?
What's that?
The manager of the team, Scott Frazier, former Raging Cajun.
Really?
Yeah, former Cajun, I believe, back in the 90s.
All right, you got to get him on our show. That's your job. Go find him. Go get him.
It's a work in progress. Jordy.
All right.
But, you know, we talk about the Florida-Miami game. We've talked a lot about the Hawaii-Arizona game. But I want to hop over to the Saints. That first drive on Saturday was extremely efficient. I believe it was, what, 6-7 plays, got it done. Was that enough of Breeze and company to hold you over for the rest of the preseason?
Absolutely. They're not even in uniform for Thursday. Against Miami, that dumpster fire, I'm playing practice squad. I'm not playing anybody that I need to have for the opener at all. I'm not, no starters, just all backups. That's why you got 90 players, right? So your 22 starters sit, 93 minus 22, that gives me 71 players. Go out there and have yourselves a ball. Have a ball. Go ahead and we'll see you next year at training camp when we need practice fodder. That's it.
Last one here for you, Jordy, on a Monday. And we're going to step away from sports for a minute because I saw this pop up this afternoon. And I'm excited about this. Saturday Night Live announced several of their hosts for their 2019 slate, including on December 21st. I think you're going to be looking forward to this one. Eddie Murphy's coming back for the first time since 1984 as the host. It's going to be amazing, celebrating the 45th year of SNL being around. It all starts with Woody Harrelson starting things off. But Eddie Murphy, could we very well see him come back with a Stevie Wonder gimmick?
Oh, my gosh. That's going to be must-see TV. Absolutely. Yes, you're going to have to remind me of that one.
Just put it in the calendar right now, Jordy.
I'll have to DVR it, but that's okay. We'll tape it and watch it. Shoot, I can't wait. I can't wait till Wednesday night. Yellowstone, final show of the season. What's Kevin Costner and his gang going to do now? Oh, it's dramatic. It's unbelievable. And, yeah, I can't wait for that. And a good movie came out. What is it? Something Has Fallen.
Man, I can't think of it because it's one of those. It's a sequel to Olympus Has Fallen, right?
Yeah, exactly. London Has Fallen. Olympus Has Fallen. London Has Fallen. And something else has fallen. And it did like 30-something million.
Angel Has Fallen.
Quickly. Angel Has Fallen. I'm going. I'm watching that one. You're always good on the movie names. That's great. All right, we'll take a quick time out here. Well done, CD. As always, Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. The Biard family in St. Martinville. Nearly 90 years, folks. 90 years. You know you're doing something right to be in business that long. And they do it with pride and gusto each and every day. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with. Whether you're going to New Orleans to watch the Cajuns, coming to Tiger Stadium and watch the Tigers, you're going to tailgate, boom, a little crystal, a little hot sauce right there, Cajun Chef, bang, it's the best. Do yourself a flavor. We'll be back. The Raging Cajuns had a press luncheon today with Billy Napier. Nick Fontenot will join us and give us the lowdown on that next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Size and speed, you know. I think that they're big, tall, long, they're fast, they're athletic. That's the number one strength that I see.
Billy Napier earlier today talking about Mississippi State's defense. Now, they lost a whole bunch of first-rounders from a year ago, but he still thinks they're going to be pretty darn good as the Cajuns open up against Mississippi State Saturday in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Nick Fontenot of the Advertiser, kind enough to join us as he does each and every Monday. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
What's going on, Jordy? How are you today?
I'm terrific, man. It's game week, and I'm excited to see what's going on. Before, I want to play another soundbite from Billy Napier, and I want to get your viewpoint on it. Here's Coach talking about his biggest concern heading into the season opener.
Well, it's the youth that we have. You know, there's going to be a number of players that don't have significant experience that are going to play, you know, and as much as we like to say, okay, hey, I've watched the guy be consistent you know, in terms of training camp and where he's at. You don't know until those lights come on, you know, and I think that that's where we've got to have great preparation.
So there you have it. That means a lot of youth has to play, right? Because they're a very young ball club, Nick.
Yeah, they got some young guys that are going to see a lot of time. But, you know, they also got some returners that are coming back. I mean, a lot of the offense is back. Running backs are very, you know, experienced. Also, got some good receivers coming in. But they will have some young guys that are going to have to play. And in order to beat an SEC team, they're going to have everybody playing pretty much their best game. So they're going to have their work cut out for them for sure on Saturday. But I think the team overall is ready to get going. They'll be up for the challenge.
You got to win up front. How confident are you in the offensive line, defensive line of the Cajuns?
Well, the offensive line is probably the strongest unit on the team. Mm-hmm. However, I think the defensive line for Mississippi State is probably their strongest unit. So it's going to be, you know, the ones against the ones. It's going to be the best against the best. And at the end of the day, you know, Mississippi State might not be that top-tier SEC team, that LSU-Alabama type team, but they're still an SEC team. They're still going to have SEC quality players, SEC speed, and you're going to have to get out there and win it. So, you know, it's going to be probably the biggest challenge of the year, getting right out the gate starting off. And, you know, if the Cajuns can somehow pull it off, it'd be a huge momentum builder for their season.
Wow. Yes, indeed. Nick Fontenot, the advertiser, kind enough to join us. I saw a couple of headlines. I want your thoughts on it. Talking about Arizona State grad transfer Nick Ralston, might be more essential for the Cajuns than expected. How so?
Yeah, I mean, I think they brought him in and they were going to use him pretty heavily already. And then we just have a lot of attrition at tight end right now. Pretty much all of the starters are either hurt. The one guy, Chase Rogers, is transferring. So now he comes in thinking he might see a little bit of playing time. Now it seems like he's going to see a lot of playing time. He's probably going to be, you know, their number one option at tight end. And also they're going to be looking for another option in the passing game. You know, they have Bam Jackson and Bradley also, but they're going to need that third option. And I think Ralston kind of steps in. He knows the system coming from Arizona State where Napier used to be. He's going to come in and maybe be one of those main targets for Levi Lewis in the offense. So I think they brought him in thinking, you know, this is good. He knows the system. We'll get him a little bit of playing time, but now he's going to be critical to their success.
No question. Nick Fontenot, the advertiser. Another headline I saw was talking about cornerback A.J. Washington. Might he be the most improved Cajun going into Napier's second season?
Man, I think so. They're really high on him, and he's done a lot of work this season to take that next step. So, yeah, he's going to be one of those guys that they're relying on, one of those guys that maybe didn't see a whole lot of playing time last year that's going to be thrown in there and get a heavy workload this year. And they're going to rely on people like that to bring them to the next level. You know, they finished 7-7 last year. It was a good first season, but now everybody's in that second year of the program, including Washington, and he's one of those guys that they're really looking to take that next step and become maybe an elite player in the Sun Belt.
It all stems from the quarterback. We all know that, Nick. And Billy Napier, listen to what he had to say about his confidence level in Levi Lewis.
He got a lot of confidence, Levi, partly because of the way he does prepare and practice. You know, the guy's, he's everything you would want in a player and a teammate. His energy, his focus, attention to detail, his coachability. I think he's got great poise. He's disciplined. He's a guy who affects the people around him in a positive way.
I guess the big question, Nick, is we know about the strength of the offensive line. We know about the three-headed monster of running backs. And this is somewhat to be determined. Can Levi Lewis, when they stack the box and they,
there's 10 players,
they just beg him to throw, can he make the passes that you need to make to move the chains and get the and keep drives alive? And that's, I guess that's to be determined.
Yeah, it is to be determined. And I think a big thing to take away from all the talk about Levi Lewis here in the offseason has been, you know, regardless of what we've seen him do, regardless of what fans and media and anyone thinks his abilities are, that team is behind him. That team 100% believes in him. I mean, that they're not just feeding you a line when they say, you know, he's our guy and we believe in him and he's our leader. That's really what they feel. And you can tell that it's a genuine feeling from all of them, from Coach Napier, you know, all the way down to his players and his receivers He's worked on building chemistry. He's a heck of a leader. You know, he's one of the biggest leaders in the locker room vocally. And, you know, if he can take his play to the next level, if he can, like you said, when they load the box, can he make those passes? Can he build that chemistry with Bam Jackson, one of the key guys that he's going to need to get hooked up with? So if he can do those things, make those big throws, and take that next step, I think it's going to be huge for them. Obviously, you know, the quarterback's one of the most important positions on the field. So if he can play at a high level, they're going to be great. But they're going to give him every opportunity to succeed. They're not going to go with the two-quarterback system, according to Napier, and he's their guy, and they believe in him. So it's all up to him at this point to make the plays and do what it takes for them to be successful.
Got to protect the football. You can't turn it over, although Florida and Miami turned it over a slew full, and Florida still won the game in week zero. But against an SEC school like State, you got to protect the football. One more clip I want to play, and Billy Napier's talking about some tool belt. Listen to this one.
We've got a tool belt. We've built all these tools to use. Now we've got to prepare for each individual game. You know, they're all a little bit different. We've got to prepare not only the intangibles that we've built, responding as a competitor with the adversity that comes with the season, but also the schematic things, the conceptually, offense, defense, and special teams, all the things that we've built throughout the offseason, throughout spring ball, summer, training camp. We've got the tool belt ready. Now we've got to pick from the right ones, and we got to use those intangibles as competitors when we get there.
That sounds like a big tool belt to me, Nick.
Yeah, you see coaches use this a lot. I mean, I remember Coach Huspeth used to, you know, want to hold the rope. He had a rope, and you would hold the rope. And you've seen coaches use lunch boxes and tactics like that. And, mm-hmm. and maybe you're just using a tool that you got the turnover chain and things like that. So, I mean, coaches right. are always using that item, that idea, that symbolism to rally around, and he's using a tool belt. And I mean, it's a perfect symbol for, you know, going to work every day. You know, a guy goes to work, a hardworking guy, he has a tool belt and he has all his tools. You might be doing one job that will require one tool, and then tomorrow you're doing a different job that gets a different tool. I think that's what he's going after. So, I mean, I don't know if it'll work or not. It's good symbolism, and it's something that's been used over time. So I guess the Cajuns will rally around the tool belt this year.
So we're going to have a vermilion and white tool belt on the sideline, and when there's a turnover, you're going to get to strap it on and wear it? Is that what we're talking about?
I would not be surprised to see that. I don't know if that was in the works, but at this point, the people are running with it, and I've seen a lot of talk on social media about the tool belt, so I wouldn't be surprised to see an actual tool belt out there.
You think this is a close game? How much stock do you put in the Cajuns against the Bulldogs?
You know, if I had to pick the game, if I had money on it or whatever, I'd probably pick Mississippi State. But I do think it's going to be a close game. I think you're going to get into the fourth quarter with the Cajuns within a score, maybe within 10 points. And, you know, if they can make a play, if the defense can make a play, if they can protect the football,
yeah.
Obviously they're going to have to win the turnover battle. If they can win the turnover battle, everybody plays well, and Levi Lewis can make a couple of plays that you're not expecting him to make, they'll have a chance to win the game. I still give the edge to State, but, you know, don't be surprised if the Cajuns pull this off. And I tell you what, if they do, that is just a gigantic momentum builder for their season, and I would for them to do some big things if they win the game.
Oh, you're not kidding, buddy. All right, Nick, thank you. We look forward to talking to you each and every Monday. We'll actually have the ability to talk about a game next week at this time. It'll be Labor Day, but I'm getting you anyway, all right?
All right, I'm ready for it, Jordy. Thank you.
All right, buddy. You take care. Thank you, Nick. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back. Ross Dellinger steps up, Sports Illustrated. He was in Orlando. We'll talk about the Gators, the Canes, and some of the big matchups like Auburn, Oregon, this weekend. Next, the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
I really love the way that our guys continue to battle, continue to compete, continue to try to find a way to win. For the entire four quarters, you know, I mean, we go back and we talk about how we want our plan to win and how we want to win games. We certainly didn't do that tonight with turning the ball over, with not scoring touchdowns when we get down in the red zone, some critical penalties at critical times. But I'm going to tell you what, our guys compete. They competed and they competed and they kept competing and kept battling. It seemed like we had to win the game about four different times.
Dan Mullen of the Florida Gators with their stealing victory out of the jaws of defeat over the Miami Hurricanes. Week zero of the college football season is in the books. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, our good friend, joins us yet again on this Monday to talk about the games that were and looking ahead to some of the big matchups this weekend. Deli, how are you, my friend?
Good, Jordy. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How was Orlando to you?
Hot. Humid and hot. And living up to in D.C. now, you know, I'm not as used to it as I was in Baton Rouge. So, you know, I actually got home to D.C. Sunday, and it was hardly any humidity. It was 70 degrees. It was unbelievable. But it was, man, it was hot and swampy and humid in Orlando. But and then on top of that, we had some pretty cruddy football.
Oh, it was, I think it was every coach's opening day nightmare. How is my team going to react? And that was just an ugly game. It was still exciting to watch, but turnovers here, and it didn't seem like either team wanted to win it. And Felipe Franks, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's been a season, all season long, of Dan Mullen and Franks himself talking about the improvements that Franks has made over the offseason, and it didn't necessarily show, you know. There were some throws that he hit. There was some throws that he badly missed, and then of course made a terrible interception, a throw you really can't make. But you know, after the game, Dan was supportive of his quarterback, blamed himself for that interception. But it was definitely not a showing that probably gave Gator fans very much confidence going forward.
No question. I think it's every coach's dilemma that they face when they're in fall camp. And it showed. Boy, the tackling was just horrendous. I think coaches are afraid to hit too much for fear of getting players injured. And that first – neither team could tackle very well.
No, they didn't. And, you know, the biggest surprise there is, you know, Florida's defense is, you know, Todd Grantham's crew is supposed to be the strength and all that. And, I mean, they probably missed at least 15 tackles. In credit to some of Miami's guys doing a good job. I mean, DJ Dallas, the running back for Miami, was kind of the player I came away from that game being most impressed by. But you know, he broke a single hand. I mean, he probably broke 10 tackles. And only had 12 carries or so in the game. And so he's breaking a tackle, a carry at least. And on a few of those, broke two or three. So that was disappointing for the Gators defense there. You know, they're good up front. There's no doubt they have a good defensive line and end up getting 10 sacks. So Miami's offensive line, obviously, has a long way to go. And they got a redshirt freshman quarterback and all that. And so they came after him pretty good. And it did. It paid off, but the tackling was really, really, really poor on both sides, and penalties and turnovers, and I mean, it was a rough game for both sides.
But a really good matchup in week zero, and this is going to be the trend from now on. They're going to have a mark. I mean, the ratings were through the roof, so they're going to have this opener to college football. It just makes great sense, right?
Yeah, they can't pass up on that money. ESPN is not passing up on that money. Those ratings were incredible, and I would imagine you'll be seeing more Week Zero games going forward here. I wrote about a little bit at SI.com. It's got some quotes from administrators at the game, asking them about the future of the Week Zero, and coaches as well. And you know, there are some concerns about, I think, from FCC Commissioner Greg Sankey about having too many teams play on week zero. I think it's probably good just to, you know, have a few, if not just one game, you know, one big maybe neutral site game or big Power 5 game like this. And if you look at next year, you know, I wrote it in that column. I'm trying to remember next year who the big season openers are that would kind of fit, a week zero matchup. And none of them are really great, you know. I think I'm trying to remember some of them. USF plays Florida, I believe, or no, plays Texas. And so that would be interesting because, you know, Charlie Strong going back to Texas. So that's kind of a big season opening game that I could see probably being something. I think Washington, I believe, plays somebody. But there's a few there. West Virginia, that might be Washington, West Virginia, or West Virginia and somebody. So there's a few I could see maybe next year kind of landing in that game. But yeah, I'd look for that game to certainly continue. I can't imagine. We'll see. Maybe we'll see. We'll start seeing some, you know, minus one games because of how good that one did.
Yes.
You know, who knows? Finally got that list pulled up. So it's Florida State in West Virginia in Atlanta. That's probably the biggest neutral site. Michigan plays at Washington. That's a pretty good one. You can see that one. Yeah, potentially moving in the USF and Texas. Those are the three kind of bigger ones to open the season. But yeah, you could definitely see Michigan or Washington or Florida State or West Virginia moving maybe into that week zero game.
Just play a game in Hawaii. Those are always fun games. Just ask Kevin Sumlin. I mean, my goodness gracious, how about that one?
Yeah, the Pac-12 continues to reel. I saw a tweet from Brett McMurphy. I think that Hawaii's win over Arizona, I think it was the fifth consecutive victory by a Mountain West conference team over the Pac-12. I mean, it is rough there in the Pac-12 right now.
Wow. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Back to Orlando. I guess we're going to have security guards with the bands now. Apparently there was some altercation with the Florida Gator band after the game.
You know, I heard about that earlier this morning on the radio. I haven't. We didn't hear about it at the game, and I hadn't even read anything about it. But I did on the radio this morning, a radio show I was listening to. I did hear. I don't have any. You know, didn't really get any details. But hey, that is an ugly rivalry. That place was packed, and it was loud, the fact that those teams don't play every year, I think, kind of adds to the rivalry in a lot of ways, you know, because it's so unique a little bit when they play. And boy, fans get everything they can out of that game. And hey, it's they hate each other. There's no doubt.
No question. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Let's take a look ahead. I guess the biggest matchup has to be Auburn versus Oregon at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. Is that where you're going to be?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm going to a couple games this week. I'm starting the week at Clemson Thursday night.
Okay, Thursday.
Clemson plays Virginia Tech on Thursday night, and then I'll be flying to Dallas for that game, Auburn-Oregon, which is, the marquee one of the weekend for sure, and should be a good one. And we just talked about the Pac-12. That's a big one for the conference, not just for Oregon, but for the conference. They've got to start winning these games like this on the field.
Yeah, no question. They played last year. Washington was ranked number 6. Auburn was number 9 in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game. Don't react too strongly to one result, right? Auburn won the game 21-16. They got to number 7. LSU beat them. They finished 5th in the SEC West. Meanwhile, the Huskies won the Pac-12 championship. So one game, don't read too much into it, but I'm anxious to see this Justin Herbert play. Excuse me. I'm thinking from the South. Justin
That's
Herbert
right.
play.
We're used to A-Bear, aren't we?
Yeah. Justin Herbert and Bo Nix, the freshman for Auburn.
No, it should. And you know what Mario Cristobal has done, and he comes from the South, spent a lot of time in Alabama, head coach down there in Florida, he's kind of built that Oregon program in the mold of a SEC type team. He's the lines are big, you know, they've increased the size of these lines, the offensive and defensive line. So they'll look, I think, a little more like the SEC team than some of those Pac-12 teams do. But, you know, I'm excited myself to watch her. You know, we don't get to watch a ton of Pac-12 right. games over here. It's just because of the timing and things like that and the TV situation. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about watching them. But you're right, we can't put too much stock in these early games. I remember a few years ago, remember we made a big deal about Notre Dame. And there's a Notre Dame and Texas game at Texas that Texas won in like overtime. Yes. It was crazy. And early in the season, everybody's like, oh, Texas is back, you know. And I think Texas finished 5-7 and Notre Dame finished 4-8 that year. So, we got to watch how much you really put into these early season matchups.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. I'm curious. A couple other games have caught my eye. I'm anxious to see what Lincoln Riley has in store for his third quarterback in Jalen Hurts. They host Houston and the debut of Dana Holgorsen as the head coach of the Cougars. So I'm curious. That should be that game ought to not last very long. That thing ought to be up and down the field.
Yeah, it's going to be a boat race probably. You know, you're probably going to see two offenses that, you know, are capable of scoring 60 points in a game, and two good quarterbacks too. Derek King is pretty solid down there at Houston, and now he's got Dana calling plays. But I think what's going to happen, you've got to look to probably, and also, you know, Houston's strength, not only King, I was down there visiting Houston a few months ago with Dana, and, you know, their skill guys, they are really high on. They've got some good receivers that they are really excited about. So that should be really interesting because they got some talent there and down there at Houston. The thing is the defense. And, you know, I know Oklahoma's defense last year really struggled and had the coaching to turn over, and Alex Grinch is now there, and he's, you know, there's a lot of hype around him. But defense can't be fixed in 1 year, you know. But you get the sense that Oklahoma's defense is probably going to have a little more talent than that of Houston. And that's probably what's going to end up separating the two teams in that game. But I would not be surprised if it was, you know, a 58-42 game, something like crazy like that.
I'm with you. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Pressure cooker for USC. They host Fresno State. That's an interesting one. And a lot of pressure on Willie Taggart at Florida State. They'll be in Jacksonville. Boise State coming to town. Those are two, watch out, be careful games.
I mean, especially out there at USC, because you look at USC's first, I think it's probably their first six games, and it is brutal. They could very easily go, you know, 2-4. And if they are 2-4 or 1-5 or whatever, I mean, they would not – Clay Helton will not be the coach, not only at the end of the season, but he probably won't be the coach going into game seven. So, but, yeah, they got Fresno. Then they host Stanford. I believe they go to BYU and host Utah and then go to Washington and then go to Notre Dame. I mean, it is as brutal as the opening six games of anybody in the nation. So Clay has got, there's no real time for this air raid offense they're running out there to kind of settle in. I mean, it's got to come out firing, and Jeff Tedford, he said Fresno's going pretty good. So that is an interesting one. I'd keep an eye on that one.
I can hear the rumors for Urban Meyer to the land of the Trojans already. I really can. Mm-hmm. And then you've got two games where when they schedule these things, they look like they may be interesting, but two of the teams have fallen off the face of the earth. One is Duke because their quarterback went early to the NFL. Alabama plays Duke in Atlanta. And does anybody – I haven't heard a peep about Notre Dame at Louisville.
I don't think you're going to hear – a ton more either those feel like two blowouts, you know, waiting to happen. To say Notre Dame is that strong of a team, but Louisville is going to take some time. You know, Petrino really left that place a mess. I mean, it's messy there, and it's going to take Satterfield some time to, to really get what he wants to happen. And then, you know, Alabama and Duke, I mean, even if Daniel Jones was still Duke's quarterback, I think the spread in that game is 35 points, which is insane. You know, it was still going to be tough. I mean, Alabama offensively, I can't see them not scoring an average of, 40 points a game. So, certainly not Duke defense.
So you go from the Clemson rock to Jerry's world. That's not a bad Thursday, Friday, Saturday, man. Life is good.
It is, yeah, it's good. It's a lot of traveling, not as much sleep as you would like, but it's fun, and you know, it's this early season. You kind of want to get out and see as much as you can in these big games, and then week three gets there, and I haven't really decided where I'm going to go week three exactly, but Georgia and Notre Dame down in Athens looms large.
All right, come on now. Remember your listening audience. What's the real Death Valley? Come on.
Well, you know, I've never been to Clemson. I have been to Clemson, but I've never been to a game there. So this will be my first chance to attend a game and get the feel from the other Death Valley.
There you go. The Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech versus Clemson Thursday night. It's only on the ACC network, man. I mean, why they do that to us? Come on.
Yeah, I know. It's the big launch. You know, that's the big launch game. The ACC network launched last week, and that's their first big game. So, I guess a lot of people probably won't get that, huh? I mean, a lot of people in the Southeast down there, Louisiana or whatever, they probably won't get a lot of that.
All right. Well, they got a lot of great restaurants in the Georgetown area. I'm sure you've already figured that out. So enjoy life in D.C. Have fun. Safe travels. And we will talk again soon, my friend. Thank you so much, Deli.
All right, Jordy. Thanks.
All right, take care, Ross. Dellinger, great work with Sports Illustrated. He'll be in Clemson. Then he'll be in Fort Worth for the biggest game of the week, and that's Washington and Auburn. But Oklahoma, Houston, that's good, and keep an eye. Fresno State at USC, Boise State, Florida State. Oh, watch out. Watch out. All right, time out. Back to wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back, and better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Thank you, Andrew Luck, for retiring now, because I would have probably picked you in our fantasy draft on September the 4th, like O.J. Simpson did. Anyway, welcome back, kiddos. Let's do a little history lesson real quick. It was on this day, August 26th, the year 1991. To baseball we go as Brett Saberhagen, the Saber, threw the fourth no-hitter in Kansas City Royal history. This time it was against the Chicago White Sox on this day, August 26th, 1991. If today is your birthday, man, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Cake, ice cream, a present or two. You share your day. Happy 49th birthday to comedian Melissa McCarthy. Happy 39th birthday, actor Chris Pine. And Mr. Home Alone himself, Macaulay Culkin, is 39 years old. And he's working on a one-legged three-point shot. Happy birthday to the beard. James Harden of the Houston Rockets is 30 years old today. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to our guest, Brooks Cabina, the advocate on the LSU side of things, Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles on the Saints, Nick Fontenot of the Advertiser on the Raging Cajuns, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated on everything else with college football. CD, great job today getting all the sound bites. Tomorrow on the program, who knows? Who knows? We'll figure it out. But I promise you, we'll touch on the Tigers, the Cajuns, the Saints. I know what we're going to do. Ben Taylor former LSU golfer, got his PGA Tour card. He's going to be playing for big bucks next year. We'll get Ben Taylor on the show and talk about that. Plus, later on this week, the master chef of the LSU Nutrition Center will join us. We'll get reports from both Georgia Southern and Mississippi State, and a whole lot more coming your way. So, thanks for tuning in. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We only have one Monday, August 26th, so make it a great afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time. Until then, for CD and me, thanks so much for listening to our partners that make it possible. We couldn't do it without you. Until tomorrow, God willing. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.